so much, Omar. I was very honored when Omar contacted me to present as part of the panel. And I really apologize. The soul is willing. I'd like to do a great job today, but my voice is not cooperating. So I will do the best that I can. And I have some interesting, great slides, which I hope that you'll agree with me are great fun to watch. The case study that I'm talking about is the Niagara Mohawk blackout, which occurred between August 14th and 16th, and its impacts on New York City. Was anybody in the region that was impacted by the blackout? Oh, great. So if my voice gives out, you can tell your stories. How do I go down?
The left.
Okay, great. So New York City is the most densely populated city in the U.S. One out of every 36 people resides in New York. There are 8.3 million people in 322 square miles, and that's 27,000 people per square mile. It is a city of skyscrapers. So what that means is that people live and work vertically, not horizontally. We have a great medical and public health capacity. We have 6 major medical schools, 67 acute care hospitals. We have the largest local department of health in the country. And the challenges there, and one other fact which I think is important. In New York City, there are 170 languages spoken, and 36% of the population was born outside of the United States. So can you imagine the challenges in trying to coordinate preparedness and response? There are daily challenges in megacities of moving people, but in New York City, they're particularly extreme. We have the largest rapid transit system in the world. 5 million people use the subway each weekday. There are 3.7 million people who work in Manhattan, and of those 3.7 million, almost 74% of them commute within the 5 boroughs. For those of you who don't know, Manhattan has 5 counties or boroughs, and all connected by trains and bridges. There are hundreds of bridges. Almost 16% of the people commute from the region. I'm one of those people. I live in the county north of Manhattan and drive every day to the south of Manhattan. There are 32% who use the subway and 8% who use commuter trains. So what happened in this blackout? Well, 50 million people lost their power. It was a sunny August afternoon, gorgeous day, 5 years ago, when a massive power failure hit the Niagara Mohawk power grid around 4:15 on a Thursday afternoon. The power of Niagara Falls provides electricity to the northeastern corridor, including Canada, and it went as far west as Toledo and Detroit, as far east as Connecticut, New York, Massachusetts, and it went all the way up to Ottawa. Government and industry officials ultimately blamed the event on a chain reaction of flaws compounding other flaws. So let's talk a little bit about how power grids work. Power transmissions are the electrical grids are all connected from state to state. And power transmissions is directed to over 100 central centers, which monitor the distribution of these grids and reroute electricity through automatic switches. When there is a high or unbalanced demand for power that develops suddenly, it can upset the distribution of electricity. So this can cause a blackout in one section of the grid, and this rippled through the other grids like dominoes. Once large sections are shut down, it may be difficult to restore from the neighboring grids because they're also being stressed, and this is especially in periods of high demand. And so power is restored in stages so that you don't get a sudden surge, which is going to cause a secondary blackout. So what happened? The blackout that cascaded from Ohio left the operators at Con Edison's control center in New York with just 8 seconds to react before their electrical grid started shutting down, and no human person can react in 8 seconds. The New York Times described this as a reminder that the country's power grid operates like a canoe. If somebody stands up, the canoe tips over. And in this case, somebody in Ohio stood up. So the power began when the power lines in Ohio sagged onto trees that had not been properly trimmed, causing fires and forcing the lines out of service. And because the problems had not been addressed quickly, the remaining power lines were overloaded and shut themselves down one by one, forcing them out of service. The system controllers could have compensated, but didn't know about the problems because the technician in charge turned the system off and went out to lunch. That's a true story. Cell phones were useless because the cellular towers lost power, and pay phones, which are disappearing across New York City, became a hot commodity. So let's talk about the blackout scenario. 85% of New York State lost all of its power for 30 hours. Workers were stuck in elevators, and you know, if you're on the 40th floor and there's no power, it's a problem. And it was hot, very, very hot. Passengers were stuck in stalled trains, computers didn't operate, and most businesses closed, although the sale of flashlights, candles, and bottled water soared. I was sitting in my office, and all of a sudden, everything got dark. And my staff, my office is located, from our window, we could have seen the World Trade Center. I happened to be in California on September 11th, but two people in my office saw the planes hit the towers. So when the power was out, they got a little nervous and they said, "What should we do?" And I said, "Go home. You know, it doesn't look like we're going to be able to do any more work. Just go home." And my son, who was out of the country, but who had an apartment at South Street Seaport, which was walkable from my office, I tried to contact him so that I could stay at his place. The garage in which I park my car has an elevator, so I wasn't going to be able to get my car, and I wasn't going to be able to walk home. I mean, I didn't know. We knew within half an hour that there was a power outage, but we didn't know how long it was going to last. And the person who had my son's extra key wasn't available. He was out of town or something. So I didn't know what I was going to do. And I walked to Bellevue Hospital, which was one of our hospitals. It was about a 3-mile walk. And this was about 5 o'clock in the afternoon when I started walking. And already, I'll show you some of the slides, there was a party atmosphere in New York. It was the most cooperative, wonderful spirit. It just really made one feel great about human capacity. So this is what happened. People started leaving work and taking over. People crowded the Brooklyn Bridge. Commuters hitched rides where they could. Office workers swarmed West Street in Manhattan, and all these people would have been out normally on the train. When they couldn't catch trains from Penn Station, which is the train station which takes people out of the area, not Grand Central, but like it goes to Connecticut and New Jersey, etc. Many people, this happens to be the Farley Post Office, many people camped out on the steps of the post office, and guests who were at hotels without air conditioning slept on the streets. This is day two. So this shows you how long it took to get the power back. So Omar had asked me to try to tie in concepts of emergency preparedness with the presentation. And in New York City, we have really the model system of emergency preparedness. The New York City of Emergency Management has an emergency operations center where all the major agencies go and coordinate whatever is needed. The Greater New York Hospital Association has a seat there, as does the Health and Hospitals Corporation where I work. Every hospital and department of health has their own emergency operations center, and everybody uses an all-hazards approach, which means that there's a scalable incident management system. So the bigger the event, the more people and resources that you bring in within your organization. And the city and the region have regular drills and constantly improve their plans. So they were ready. Mayor Bloomberg, unlike Mayor Giuliani during after 9/11 and the anthrax, Mayor Bloomberg was very proactive and really helping people and telling them to be wary of the heat. So rather than waste food, people barbecued outside, like here in the Bronx. Neighbors held impromptu picnics to use up everything that was in the refrigerator, and strangers on the streets huddled around boomboxes to get news about what was happening. There was regional coordination, collaborative planning and responding. HHC in Greater New York facilitated the ability of hospitals to obtain resources such as generators and fuel. There was a dedicated radio channel which was put in place for Y2K, which was used, and they have daily roll calls and drills which use the radio prior to the blackout, so they were able to communicate with everybody when the phones weren't operable. But their HERD system, which is also a system that was put in place after 9/11, it's a statewide system to get electronic data about bed capacity, and they had trouble capturing data with that. So what were the public health problems? Because there were many, despite the fact that this was a controlled emergency, there were many problems in the 30 hours. First of all, hospital generators failed. Electrically powered equipment, particularly for people who are dependent on electrically powered equipment, they lost power. And if they didn't have a generator, their lives potentially were in danger. Electronic data could not be input into the syndromic surveillance system. So how do you know if there is a potential epidemic or outbreak happening? Vaccine spoiled. The beach was contaminated from untreated waste. There were heat-related health effects, of course. Increased foodborne illness, which I'll talk about in a minute, and increased rodent activity. The Department of Health and Mental Health, and I failed to acknowledge and really want to extend a sincere appreciation to Dr. Isaac Weisfuss, the Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Health and Mental Hygiene. He was my co-author on the paper and asked that I present. And this information came from Isaac, and he and his colleagues led the charge in protecting the community's public health during this outbreak. So there were multiple responses. The first was logistics. They helped to ensure that generators were operating with adequate fuel at the public health lab, because when the hospital lab stopped working, then all of the specimens were sent to the public health lab for specimens that had to be run immediately. They secured the perishable vaccines from the numerous Department of Health and Mental Health clinics that are out in the community and transferred them to the public health lab. And so when you saw the picture of all those people on the streets, and they couldn't use subways, so they had to get access to cars, and if the cars were in a garage with an elevator, that was not an easy thing to do. And then to go to the various clinics which are in the five boroughs and bring them to the public health lab, which is at 26th Street. It was no small feat. They had to equip the EOC with laptops, the printer, and wireless communication. You know, core logistic stuff, but without it, you can't do any business. From a medical point of view, they monitored the delivery of care There were four hospitals that had no power. The steam sterilization systems failed. So at the various hospitals, if they had to do any kind of emergency procedures, they couldn't do them because they didn't have sterile equipment. They received numerous calls about what we do about vaccine spoilage and how to protect it. And in my book, I actually worked with the person at the department who protects the vaccine for New York City. And there is a page in there about what do you do about vaccine spoilage. And she says, don't throw it away. Get my book if you don't have it, and you'll find it there. They staffed cooling centers, which were opened by the Office of Emergency Management. And they worked with the Housing Authority to contact vulnerable people. Remember, I talked about New York City being a vertical city. So if you had the elderly, or you had people who were medically fragile living high up someplace, how do you make sure that they're okay? And how do you get them some help if you need it? And the Department of Health worked on that. From an epidemiological point of view, they tried to maintain their surveillance the old-fashioned way. Was this terrorism? I think very quickly on, we knew that it wasn't, but was there the possibility of terrorism? Did somebody who was ready see this as a window, and so they monitored that, and fortunately there wasn't. They monitored the potential health-related effects such as heat stroke, carbon monoxide poisoning, because people had no light, so maybe they were using fires, although it was so hot. There also was no water, by the way, because I, like many people, had to find other places to stay, and I stayed with a colleague. She was only on the third floor, but if you were on the 40th floor of a building and water is moved up the building with electricity, you had no water. She had no water on the third floor. And so, you know, what do you do if you need to drink, if you don't have a water supply? It was a problem. And 3 days after the blackout, because of their surveillance, they discovered a, quote, robust increase in diarrheal illness associated with eating spoiled foods. People didn't know when it was too late, and they didn't want to throw it away. From an environmental point of view, they wanted to make sure that water was potable. They continued restaurant inspections. Some restaurants stayed open. It was very interesting. Some restaurants stayed open. Some restaurants gave away food. When I was walking to Bellevue, there was an ice cream store. I said, oh, great. It was a great day for ice cream. And I went in, and they were not giving it away. They charged me a premium for it. So some people tried to do what they could to make up for what the lost business was going to be. There was a potential increase in rodents because the usual waste contractors who pick up refuse couldn't get around. New York City Department of Sanitation helped, but they had to bait 40 extermination sites. And I don't know any of you have been in New York City, but there are periods of time when you'll see the rats walking around like this, and they kind of like think like this, and they think they own the street. By my office, you know, by the health department. I once emailed Tom Frieden, who is a colleague. I sit on his advisory committee. I said, Tom, what are we going to do about the rodents in the neighborhood? And New York, by the way, is extremely clean. It is just marvelous. But they somehow, just like the roaches, they somehow think they own the place. There were 500 million gallons of untreated sewage, which was accidentally released. So the beaches were closed for 3 days, which was unfortunate because it was over a long weekend. People didn't have power. They didn't have water. But anyway, what are you going to do? You know, it was a public health hazard. They closely monitored the fuel supply for generators, and they instituted their mental health system. I see that I'm short of time. So just from a hospital point of view, there was a high demand on our emergency rooms. The elderly came for shelter, high pharmacy demand. Radiology, you lost all radiology because it's not on the generators. Elective surgeries were canceled. Morgue refrigeration failed, so that was an interesting challenge. At Bellevue Hospital, where I was, let me say a little bit about, oh, sorry, let me go back. It was just at the change of shift, and Bellevue is like a 15-story building. The food was in the basement, and the kitchen was on the 12th floor. So they had a chain of people carrying all the food all the way up to the 12th floor. They fed everybody who was in the hospital. I went up there and got food and took it to the executive suite, and they fed every patient and carried the food up and down the stairs. And I don't want to take up any more time because I see we're supposed to end at 10, correct? Yeah, okay. But thank you. I will be around afterwards if you want to ask any questions.
Thank you, Linda. We have 10 minutes for questions. We have a great group of people here. Yes.
Lessons we can learn from this on a personal level. In reviewing those records, there were large